This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Everybody, this is episode number 75 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
Hallie is out tonight. She is working hard for the money. So we called our friend Kate Donnelly, who was a big hit from the last time she was on the show, to join us. So welcome back to the show, Kate.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me again. I'm excited to be here.
Yay. Thank you for coming on such short notice.
Anytime. My life is magic, so I'm pretty much on call for all magic needs all the time. Like, I feel like I need like a bat signal, but a magic signal.
And what would your magic signal be? Like, what would the beacon in the sky look like?
Like a silhouette of Liliana, for sure. For sure. That or a metal worker, because I am working on getting that as a tattoo right now.
Ooh, okay, I'm going to take it one step further, though. The metal worker, doesn't the metal worker have like a beam coming out of it?
Yeah, he does.
The beacon should be the metal worker, and it should be beaming up into the sky.
Yes, please.
Oh, man. And you're actually getting married soon, yeah?
I am. Next June. I'm so excited.
That should be at your wedding. Like the metal worker beam, just, you know.
I'm down for that. So the big joke right now is I'm trying to get my hands on of life-size BB-8, so that can be my ring bearer. So I like the idea of getting some magic in there.
I'm all about that.
Oh my god, that is like delightfully nerdy.
Right, I'm all over BB-8. I actually just tweeted a picture of a mug my coworker got me. She walked into Michael's and saw it, and it has BB-8 on it. She's like, "I had to buy it for you. I saw it and couldn't stop thinking of you." I'm okay with that.
See, that's what I call good branding.
Mm-hmm. Right?
That's like when people tag me in anything that has to do with Dredge. It's like some people are like, you know, isn't that kind of annoying or isn't that kind of pesky? And it's like, no, that means you're doing it right. Like that means that you've ingrained something in people where when that happens, it's like word association, they think of you. That's how it should be.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And if people are equating me with an adorable yet intelligent droid, I'm down.
And if people are thinking of me whenever they play a painfully cruel mechanic that breaks all the rules and makes them want to die.
Perfect.
I've done my job. So as I said before when I was introducing you, Kate, your last appearance on the show was really well received and people seem to really enjoy listening to you. So what have you been up to since the last episode?
Well, I haven't been playing Magic as much as I normally do, only because I'm taking a lamp working class, which is working with glass. It's kind of like glass blowing, but on a smaller scale. But I'm still doing a lot of Magic because my job. So I'm running drafts and having a love affair with Kaladesh as an artifacts lover. I can't help but kind of be madly in love at the moment. So I've been drooling over Kaladesh. That's really all I do 24/7 is sit there and drool. I made Aaron brew me, my fiance, for those of you who don't know him, brew me an awesome mud deck using some Kaladesh fun stuff. So that's kind of been that's all I've been doing, really.
And you're still writing for hipsters, yeah?
I am still writing for hipsters. I did take last week off because of my glass blowing class, but hipsters is definitely still a job for me. A year and a half later, for some reason, they still like my articles, so I'm still writing them.
And they recently just launched their Patreon, yeah?
We did. I'm super excited by it. We lost our Patreon a few weeks ago. It's still going. We're still trying to hit our goal of $100 a month. We're just trying to pay things like server costs and whatnot. And we have some wicked fun rewards up there. So it's definitely worth checking out. It's easy to find because it's patreon.com/hipstersofthecoast. So not exactly hidden. It's also on my Twitter, just saying.
There's that branding again.
I did get a PR degree.
Awesome. Awesome. So if anybody is listening and you enjoy Kate's work or anybody's work at Hipsters of the Coast, you should go support them because they're really doing some good work. And Jess Sterba, especially, I know she's taking a bit of a break from social media, but she's always, she wrote a post the other day that was about politics and finding calm and like organizing your cards.
Yeah, Jess is... articles are always a 10 out of 10. And if you enjoy listening to The Girlfriend Bracket, I feel like you should be mandated to read Jess's column every week.
Yeah, she really hits home a lot of the time, and there's just a lot of good work coming out of Hipsters, and so I hope that your Patreon is successful.
Thank you. We hope so, too. I like keeping my website running and going well. I don't know if anyone's ever been on our website, they'll see that we actually only have one sponsor, and that's on purpose. It's not because people don't like us, but it's because we really want to remain unbiased as possible. A lot of the other big websites that are writing about magic, you know, they tell you what to play and then they sell you what to play.
Hello.
So, right? So we're trying to stay like as unbiased as possible, which is really, really hard to do. Cast Haven is our only sponsor, and they're kind of like a deck hosting website, so, you know, we don't really have any conflict of interest by letting them sponsor us. So we feel much better being sponsored by the people who read us, because, you know, we're so dedicated to you already, like, we don't want to betray you guys.
You know, it took me so long as a player to realize that that was a thing, or to sort of like peel the veil back on that. You know, I was that person where I would read an article from, you know, Brad Nelson or Reed Duke, and I would run out and buy the list thinking that they were going to play it too, or thinking that they were going to keep writing about it. And then, you know, having that realization, running into them at the event and going, oh, are you going to play that little Soul Tie ramp deck that you talked about in the article? And they're like, no. And I'm like, oh, so I shouldn't have bought all these Ugins and you know, I think I fell for it even as early as like a year ago. And like, you know, I still have to kind of remind myself that this is just what they're writing about to pay the bills. This isn't necessarily a great deck. And that's something I had to kind of remind myself going into that. But I still forget that that's sort of the deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that I feel like is really hard. That's why it's like so important to every single one of us who works at Hipsters to remain an unbiased source. And like, we keep our big joke is, you know, like, we're never going to be like the number one wizard supported website because of it. Though, you know, they do put us on like the daily update and everything all the time. But, you know, our number one priority is like giving good, honest magic news and articles. And, you know, it's harder to do than you think it would be.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny because I remember even when the deck tease took off, and it's like, you know, I always had a very laissez-faire kind of attitude about it, where I certainly didn't go after Wizards approval. You know, my show was scandalous kind of from the get-go, and, you know, it was a coincidence that, you know, folks from Wizards happened to enjoy it, but people would be like, you know, well, you know, you set out to be this thing. And I was like, no, I really didn't plan on this, and I couldn't have cared less. And I think that's kind of why it happens. Like, I think when you don't care and you sort of dance like nobody's watching, that's when you sort of pick up, you know what I mean? But the people who try, the people who are like, notice me, Wizards, and they're flailing their little arms, and then they get really upset when Wizards doesn't. And I find the opposite is true. Like, if you just do what you're doing anyways and you don't care, then people notice you.
I think the best content comes from people just like writing what they're really thinking. Yeah. And not worrying about what other people have to say. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like where what you say totally rings true, because, you know, it's, you're not going to be writing like really from the heart and really anything. Like, you might be writing things people want to read, but if it's not from the heart, it's not going to be nearly as good.
Well, you're always going to be keeping one eye on like the metrics. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to have one eye on what you're creating, but then you're going to have that other eye on like your downloads, your views, your tweets, your followers, your retweets. And it's like, no, just keep both eyes on the ball. Like, keep the eyes on what you're doing.
So to be totally honest, I have access to those things if I really want them. I actually don't look at those things at all.
Oh, me neither.
I stopped looking at them a while ago. And the only reason I was looking at them was to help with digesting. And I'm so glad I did. Because while, like, I found it influenced what I wanted to write about. Like, after the article, I guess, that people started realizing, oh, hey, that's a person, let's read her column, was when The View From Here went, like, semi-viral. And, you know, I was so worried about, like, staying on top of that. That for like a few weeks I was like, I don't know what to write. I gotta like live up to that. And then I went back to just like writing whatever I felt like that week, and I felt like my content started getting better.
Yeah, absolutely. So somebody else who's at the top of her game, we have a woman of excellence this week. She was featured on Gathering Magic the other day. Her name is Dani Hartel. She is a cosplayer from Washington State. She's best known for her Ajani cosplay, or her Lady Ajani. Really excellent job. She makes videos on how to cosplay as well. There's a video here involving her sort of distressing her Nahiri costume, you know, giving it that kind of dirty, rough look. She was also responsible for making some of the props that you saw at PAX West if you were there. She is phenomenal. I really loved the body positivity that she was mentioning in her post. Like, you know, MJ Scott asked her some questions and she was like, I love to eat. I love pizza. Sorry about it. And Preach. I thought that was really refreshing, you know, and she just was really candid. And the other thing I really enjoyed was sort of her advice. You know, MJ asked her, what is your advice for people who are thinking about trying cosplay for the first time? And she says, I think my advice for people at any level is to really think about what makes you excited about a character, then figure out how to bring that excitement to other people. Is it the size, the scare factor, the overall beauty? And being excited about your own cosplay is the only thing that will drive you to finish it.
Nice.
And I thought that was so inspirational because I always say that I'm going to start a cosplay and I never do. And so, you know, being your own biggest fan and being excited about your own work is really good motivation. And so if you do want to support Dani, there's some wonderful photos of her over at gatheringmagic.com. You can also find her on her website at DaniHartel.com, DaniHartel, Facebook.com/DaniHartelArt, and on Twitter at DaniHartel. So let's get started with what we did. Katie, you streamed.
I did. I followed through and I did it.
How did it go?
Oh, it went horribly. But it was good. I had a good time. I had no idea if anybody was even watching by the end because it was.
See, you were keeping your eye on the ball.
It was a train wreck. Yeah. It's hard to take your eyes away from the train wreck sometimes. I should have gotten
the whistle now.
Yeah, I should have gotten that broken whistle out of the trash and just been like, because it was off the rails. So it was my first time playing Kaladesh because I didn't get to do the pre-release, so I was excited to try it out. And my first impressions is that I think it's going to be a very good draft set if you know how to draft it. And I felt all over the place the whole draft, which is not usually where I like to be. I'm usually a pretty straightforward, logical drafter. I stay in my colors and I kind of have a, you know, somewhat of a plan after the first pack. But I was just like, well, this card seems okay. I guess I'll take that and hope it works out.
You drafted like I do.
Yeah. It was like grabbing out of a bag without looking. Oh my God. So I drafted black-red, and my first pick was the red Gear Hulk. So I was like, oh, this seems okay. I've heard the Gear Hulks are pretty decent. And I tried to take, like, some okay creatures. There wasn't a ton of red going around pack one. I took a few white cards because I was like, well, maybe this will be okay. And then in pack two, I opened the black Gear Hulk, and I was like, wow. That seems good too. We'll just throw that in the mix. So I tried to go black red. I think there's somebody else in my pod that was also in black red, probably not right next to me, but a few spots away, which made it, I mean, the cards were mediocre. But all the packs seemed a little lackluster, and I don't know if that's going to be typical or not, but you know, I'll just have to see by drafting more. What I found was that I had some removal spells, but they're all for pretty small creatures, like 1 and 2 toughness. And when I got into games, I was like, well, I can kill your 1/1 token that you get to make another token with, or nothing, because you got like a 4/4, 5/5, and I've got 2/2s. Yeah. So, I did notice that creatures were a little bit fatter than I thought. I thought it was going to be really, a really, really quick format, which in my games, it wasn't. I played against a blue-white vehicle flyer deck that was just, like, bonkers. And I think, I mean, flying is always powerful in limited formats, but I think especially in Kaladesh because there's a lot of things that just kind of muck up the ground, so getting through with flying seems pretty good. And then I couldn't decide if I wanted, like, there's a lot of artifact synergy, but I couldn't figure out if I wanted to commit to artifacts while drafting because there's cards that do stuff with artifacts, but then it's like, what if I don't get enough artifacts to make this work? Then my whole plan is just kaput. So I had like, I don't know, 5 artifacts at the end of it, but it didn't really all come together the way I kind of wanted it to. So I think next time, I mean, if there's a lot going around, I think I need to commit a lot more. I went 0-2 on the stream and then stopped for the evening. And I played my other round and I did win, but it was not very pretty. So I don't know. I think there's definitely a lot to learn in this draft. I haven't really felt out of depth in a draft like this for a while. And maybe it's just because I'm out of practice, but I would like to get a little better and I hope to be streaming again soon.
Yeah. Was a chat positive and happy to see you?
Yeah, there was, it was a little quieter than normal, but I know that there was a lot of bigger fish that were streaming as well. But, everybody was happy and helping me out. I had a few people who were like, take that card. No, not that card. And I was like, okay, we'll just do it together. but yeah, no, it was good. Everybody was having a good time, I think.
Yeah, I was really happy to see that you were streaming. And it seems like the response, at least that I saw, was people just really happy too. And, you know, there's demand for you out there and people love you. And so I hope that you give them more of what they're looking for.
Yeah, I hope I can give them a little bit more winning.
Yeah. Too.
I was like, oh, this is not going well.
Yeah, that sounds like my experience. So I also did some streaming the other day. I streamed the Legacy Challenge on Magic Online. The 7 rounds, there were 78 players. And, you know, I've said this before, but I have such a newfound respect for streaming. I streamed a Modern League the other day and it was only like 3 hours. And that was exhausting. But mm-hmm. having to be entertaining for 7+ hours is a lot. I was so sick of looking at like the 4 walls of my apartment that I just had to get out. Like once the stream was over, I was like, I need food, but I don't want it here. I don't want to look at this floor and that poster and I need to get the fuck out. And so I went for like a mile walk to get pizza and I ate and I made sure to get like a corner table where nobody could see me. And I just needed to be isolated because I had been on for a good 7+ hours. And the thing that really struck me is that Dredge's games tend to be over very quickly. And so there was at one point for the first round, there was 35 minutes left. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh, well, how are you guys doing? Like, I thought we just have like a nice little question and answer session. I would get to know you. And chat was like, do you have any other decks? And I was like, I've got a popper deck. You should go to the tournament practice room, like right now. And I was like, okay. And so I ended up just grabbing a popper deck. And like when people are watching you stream, they want to be entertained. Like they do not want any downtime. They don't want to know how you're doing. You just got to keep playing. And so I kind of felt like, you know, the hamster on the wheel of like, just keep going. Don't stop because mm-hmm. because chat's going to ask you, like, is there anything else? You got any other decks? You got any other rooms you can join? And it's like, and so I was playing popper in between rounds, which was a lot of fun. I was playing modern in between rounds. I was just doing anything I could to keep chat entertained. And my chat was really positive and they were really helpful. I had some friends from Twitter who I know and who I knew would be there. I ultimately went 4-3, which was good enough for 32nd place on the nose. Nice. Let me get my cost of entry back out of 78 people. I lost to Miracles twice, which is really unusual because that's normally a fine matchup for me. But I did have several bad dredges and some bad starts, and both of them were running Monastery Mentor. Which is a really great way to sort of close out the game against me. And so I didn't really have much I could do about that. One Miracles list hit me 3 times with Surgical Extraction. And Surgical Extraction by itself is an okay card against me, but 3 of them is just, I can't beat that. And so that was very difficult. And then I ended up losing the lands, but I'm very inexperienced against lands. And I did have a bad beat story. I did go off on turn 1. I dredged myself down to 18 cards and I did not see a single Narcomoeba or a single Icarid.
Oh no.
Oh, it gets better. It gets better.
Oh no.
So turn 2, I happen to hit a Narcomoeba and I'm like, okay, I'm totally in this. I'm going to Cabal Therapy and I'm going to name Crop Rotation and it's going to be wonderful. And so I look at the hand. I see 2 Crop Rotations and I'm like, oh, this is great. I just got 2 Crop Rotations. And chat goes, look at the rest of the hand. And the rest of the hand is Glacial Chasm, no. Tabernacle.
Oh God.
This is natural draw. This was their opening hand. They drew 1 card. So they opened with this hand. And then something else. And I was just like, I can't beat this.
They could have had Pajuka Bog in that hand.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And so that was just a really nasty. And so chat was like, those are some really bad beats. And so, so definitely some bad beats, definitely some bad dredges, but I had a lot of fun. It was just such a new experience for me. Like I said, I've never had to be on like that before. So, you know, these streamers that are doing 12-hour streams and 24-hour streams, God bless them because that shit is work. I still feel like I'm kind of recovering from it. You know, I just had to kind of retreat read into WoW, didn't really want any social contact. And it's a lot of work. But, if you do get like a devoted fan base or like a devoted chat, it's a good thing too. Like, you know, the camaraderie that you build, it's, you know, you're kind of building like your own little community, your own little, you know, there's the greater Magic community, but then you sort of make your own. And I feel like that's really evident when you go to like Mrs. Mulligan's stream and you go to Gabby's stream, they have like their own little bubbles. And so I really look forward to kind of making my own little bubble and seeing what I can kind of cultivate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That'd be awesome.
And while we were at home streaming, being bums, Chris, you were living the life in Hotlanta.
I was.
Tell us about Hotlanta.
It was a lot of fun. I had never been to Atlanta before. It was kind of a whim that I decided to go, but I was really into Kaladesh. I still am. And I thought it would be pretty fun. So I left on Friday evening, took a late flight in, got into the airport, just wanted to eat all the things and just relax and have like a few minutes to watch the Cubs game. And they won. And that was wonderful. And ate a bunch of appetizers and had a few drinks, and that was great. Went back to the Airbnb that we had got for the weekend and just kind of like slept, and it was wonderful. Then got up the next morning to do the main event, hoping that I was going to have a pretty awesome pool. And I did, again. I didn't do so hot with it, which is probably partly my fault, and then also the fault of bad draws. I really wanted to run a 46 card deck because I thought it would be okay.
Wait,
what? Yeah. Well, sometimes you can get away with like 41, 42 cards, but I was like, eh, this is fine. But I had a lot of good stuff. I had Nessa Vital Force, Smuggler's Copter, Sky Sovereign, Council Flagship. Yeah. Visionary Augmenter, like just like all these like awesome cards, Arborback Stomper, and a larger than life, just like all this like awesome shit. So like when I'm losing later and like, or like when I'm like up again, people are like, you lost with this? I'm like, yep, that's MTG. So later on, you know, I'm at the back tables and I'm hanging out with Morgan Jansen and we're just talking, and the guy next to me didn't have an opponent, nor did I. And so we ended up playing together. And that was a lot of fun because I could tell that he just really wanted to play his deck. And we had a good game. And that was awesome. All my opponents, I think, all day were really super cool. No jerks, nothing like that. So I continue to have good opponents. So I love that. I did get to meet up with Aaron Reed for the first time. And he is super awesome. Very, very grateful for the show. Super great guy. I hope to see him again sometime because he was just the best. Met a lot of fans. Re-met some people that I had met before, and that was really cool. Met a listener who works for NASA named Andrew. He was pretty awesome. Wow. Yeah, he gave me a NASA sticker.
Wow.
And I was like,
that's super sweet.
Yeah, I was like, oh my God. I'm like, sweet. And I told some more people about the podcast and such. And even though I didn't do the best in the tournament, I still stuck it out, played through it, and just kind of tried to cheer for the people in my life that were doing well. Morgan Wentworth did very well. My friend Ben that I went there with, he made day two again, which was really cool. And my friend Cash Turner took second place. So I was pretty excited for him. This is something that he's been wanting for a very long time. And even though he lost in the finals, I'm still like just shocked that day two he could just pilot hot garbage and still still get there. But it's something that he's known for. So I was, again, kind of like just vicariously living through the people in my life that also play the game. The second day, I decided to do the modern challenge that was going on at 11 o'clock. Originally, I'd wanted to do... It was an IQ, but I didn't get there in time. Sleep was important. very important. So I did a modern challenge. It was the first time I got prize ball tickets. I went 2-2. I played my first match versus a Lady Naya player, Naya Byrne. So I beat her, advanced on to play a gentleman named TJ, who I told about the show, and he told me about a YouTuber that I guess I need to check out that does magic, a friend of his. So I'm super excited to do that. He was on a homebrew that was all kinds of like, wow, I don't even know. It was Lala's Troll, Varla's the Scar Striped.
I'm listening.
Death Shadow, Everything in Your Graveyard Has Scavenge, Vengevine. Yeah, it was.
You're basically nibbling on my ear right now.
Yeah, I even said, I'm like, I know someone that would like this. But yeah, he let me look at it, and it was, I think he wrecked with it from what I can understand. I'll have to see if I can get the list from him, because he actually added me on Facebook recently, and I was like, sweet, cool. We found each other again. And so, that was really awesome. And I went on to play a Scape Shift mirror match, but he was on, Bring to Light Scape Shift and I was on Titan Shift. So I ended up losing to him out of three, but we had fun games. It was really cool, especially to see how like the other half lives. And I could make that deck if I wanted to, but I'm just like, no, Titan's more consistent. I'm more down with this. And then the last match I played was versus a gentleman who had just started playing Modern Dredge. And he was very slow at it. But it was cool to see like him trying to learn the deck and, you know, see, you know, if he could get some really, really awesome dredges. Like the first game, he just wrecked me. Usually I don't have a hard time versus dredge. And it was just like, he had just some baller dredges. The subsequent, games were not quite as, awesome as those two for him. I ended up beating him, got my prize wall ticks, and then I decided to turn them in to get a little ooze pin, and it's the cutest, and I plan to wear it like everywhere. So I got one of those and just hung out, talked to people. Our friend Andy Cooper was there, so I talked to him. Of course, Emma was there, got to catch up with her for a little bit, get some cards signed. So I'm slowly getting all my towers signed by Mark Poole. And I got my Trolley Jester's Cap playmat. The thing is like the shit. I'm so excited about it. Like, I literally wanted to rock it out of the building. And it was just awesome just to hang out and play Magic, talk to people, the typical GP fare. But going there actually did kind of inspire me to get some more ideas for some blog posts that I wanted to write. So I don't know that I necessarily would have had those ideas jump into my head if I hadn't gone there. Atlanta was a beautiful city. All the Uber drivers that we had were just more than fabulous. I had this wonderful Creole lady pick me up to take me to the event center on Sunday, and we had an awesome conversation about like religion and politics and race and all kinds of cool stuff. It was awesome. And then the first Uber driver that we had the first night we were there really hooked us up and took us to a couple of different places so we could try to buy some alcohol. We were like, we just want to sit back and like have some beers before we go to bed. And it, like, Georgia apparently is a weird state where there's not like, there's not typical, I guess, like liquor laws. Like, I had a conversation with Emma about that later, and they wouldn't like sell anything after like 11:45 or something, like, just like an arbitrary time.
Well, like, that seems late for us because I'm in New England where we have blue laws.
Oh wow, so like before then they stopped selling?
Yeah, so Jesus. You can't buy alcohol before a certain time on like Sundays and holidays, and like you can't buy it on like Thanksgiving or Christmas or anything. And on Sundays they have to stop selling it at 7. Later in the week, it's like midnight, like more normal times. But yeah, they have blue laws. It's a New England thing from when it used to be like Puritan land up here. But a lot of the laws have still held over where, like, you in Massachusetts, you can't have a chain liquor store.
What?
So like, I can only buy I can't buy liquor at grocery stores most of the time.
Wow.
Or like gas stations, I can only get them at like liquor stores, which are always like locally owned because you can't have a chain.
That's so bizarre. Like, I'm telling our Uber driver, because he hooked us up. He took us to, like, 5 different places, and, like, we just gave him, like, some little tips here and there. We're like, thanks, man, like, for hooking us up. But I was like, I live in Wisconsin now. We have drive-thru liquor stores, so this is weird to me.
What? Wait, drive-thru liquors? Sorry, yeah. You're, like, so
there's one. New there's, Hampshire? Like, two in my town.
I mean, New Hampshire, literally, all. So even though it's live free or die, all the liquor stores are state-owned.
Wow.
Like, it's like very different out here. Huh. Drive-through. Damn, we're screwing up out here.
That just means you need to move out here so that way you can not only get your booze in a drive-through, you can come to more magic events with us.
Yes, please. Would, except awesome. I need my legacy.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Get some legacy going and I will be on your doorstep with a suitcase.
We'll just take you through enough rounds of the drive-through liquor store. You won't even realize it's legacy.
And you'll be like, sweetie, this is legacy. I'm like, this looks like sealed. No, it's legacy. Oh, yeah. You guys are right.
You're going to say it's sealed. And it's like, Chris, do another lap. Just right through. We need some more. Now do you believe it's legacy? Oh, yeah. This tireless tracker's gas. Yep. Good to go.
But all in all, it was an awesome time and I'm really glad I went. And it was interesting though to like see like who showed up there that I didn't even know was going to be there. And I was like, what? Yeah. I didn't know you were here too. And so it was just good to catch up. And, it made me even more psyched just to go to Dallas because once I did the modern challenge the second day since I didn't make day two, I realized I'm like, yes, this is my element. This is my format. Not that I don't appreciate kind of like cheating on modern with other formats, but I just realized that like that's where I want to be, and I'm even more determined to make day two in Dallas, and so that is going to be my goal, and I can't wait to go.
Woot. So Kate, I want to go back to your format of choice, legacy. You know, one of the things I was really surprised by was the variety of decks that I faced in the legacy challenge. There was one young man who was on a Strix Fit, which is a version of Nick Fit that runs Baleful Strix and Birthing Pod. Have you seen this?
I have. I had a friend running it for a little bit. To be honest, I was making fun of him a lot because I was trying to remind him that this was legacy and not modern. And, you know, it was like, stop trying to make fetch happen. he played Birthing Pod in modern when it was a thing. So he's definitely like very like, come back to me. But no, I have seen it. I think it's actually kind of sweet. I love Nick Fit decks. I've played some Nick Fit brews before, so I've been pretty happy whenever I see the deck popping up. It's kind of fun, though. I'm sure as a Dredge player, you have not too much love for it when it's being played properly.
Yeah, I faced it twice the other day. One was just good old-fashioned Nick Fit, and then the other was the Sultai version with Birthing Pod. And the whole time, I'm just sitting there with my fingers crossed going, don't activate Pod, don't activate Pod, don't activate Pod, because if you Pod even once, you exile all my bridges, and that's just a really bad scene. And, you know, the last time we had you on, this was right before the banning and restriction announcement, and nothing changed. And I know that you've been a very vocal voice for just getting some shakeups and legacy. And so, you know, how did you feel when you heard that there were no changes to legacy?
Well, there may or may not have been a drink poured and a table flipped, not necessarily in that order.
Couple rounds through the drive-thru.
Yeah, right. I was pretty upset about it. Anybody who's read my column knows my feelings on this or is listening to me on Leaving a Legacy. So I'm sorry to those of you who have heard this broken record before. But for 2 years now, I have been riding the Let's Do Something About Miracle Strain since it's been about 15-20% of the meta, you know, waving in between there for 2 years now. It's a long time. Makes Splinter Twins dominating the format look like a little baby. And I'm really, really sad that Wizards has continued to not do anything about that. Because, I mean, 20% of the meta is a lot. And it's not like if you deal with miracles in the appropriate way, i.e., in my opinion, ban counterbalance, like you're going to nuke the deck or get rid of like a good control deck from the format. There are other good control decks. Miracles would still be good without counterbalance. But it's pretty disappointing that Wizards has chosen to continue leaving it alone. I think that it weakens the format and makes it boring. Who wants to play against Miracles all day? Like, one out of every five matches you're playing is against Miracles, i.e., one out of every five matches, unless you're on post, is a draw. Like, that's awful. That's like, no one wants to play that format. And like, Legacy is such an awesome format, and it needs that shakeup, I feel like, pretty badly. Like, I know that it's not their number one priority, but I literally just need them to write, like, what? We are banning counterbalance. Four words. I need four words from you, wizards. That's all I'm asking for.
So do you think there's any merit to that sort of that conspiracy theory that because there's not as many, you know, major events for it, that it isn't a priority? And so that's why, you know, the theory that the format has basically been abandoned, which is what some people are saying about modern too, and that because there's no modern pro tour, you know, certain things are allowed to just kind of run amok. Do you think that's true with Legacy?
So I actually think Wizards is ignoring Modern more than it's ignoring Legacy.
Really?
And I know most people are, yeah, right? I'm like, feel like most people have that response. But I know that Legacy is not their number one format. And it, I don't see a reason why it should be. Like, they don't have a ton of ways to make money off Legacy players, right? So, like, why should we be their number one priority? The reason I think that we're still somewhat a priority is, I mean, we got Eternal Masters this summer. Conspiracy is, for the second time in a row, like, full of great Legacy stuff. And now we have these awesome masterpieces. Like, all of these are things that have happened in, like, the last 3-4 months that all are, like, in my opinion, major Legacy support. And I actually wrote a column about this recently because I feel so strongly about it. And I know I'm a little biased. I live in New England where, you know, Legacy is very much alive and well. And, you know, we don't see anything really negative happening to it. If I wanted to, I could play Legacy Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. Wow. And that's just weekly tournaments. Like, if I had that time, I could do that. I could probably convince some stores to open up more tournaments. Like, that's how alive the Legacy scene is here. Mm. So, you know, I'm definitely very biased. But I think that it's doing fine. On Modern, on the other hand, I feel like, you know, for something that was their pet format, they're kind of really ignoring it. Like, cutting it from the Pro Tour, like, you know, nuking like the number one deck every year. Like, I feel like Modern players have more reason to be upset about Wizards and their treatment of the format than Legacy players do. I feel like the only two gripes Legacy players can have is they've cut back on support a bit, right? Which wasn't entirely just Wizards. That was also tournament organizers. Mm-hmm. And you know, like, that's also happened to Modern. And the other argument is, they're freaking ignoring the counterbalance problem. And those are the only two real complaints. And, like, they can't be perfect all the time. Like, they definitely need to fix that counterbalance problem. Don't think I'm saying they can ignore it. But, like, like, let's be real. They're, like, a huge business doing, like, a million things. Like, of course, like, they can't please everybody all the time. And, like, they're not making mad bank off Legacy like they will with things like Standard. So I think they're considering it's not like a huge moneymaker for them, that we get more than plenty of support from them. And I'm fairly happy. Of course, I'd like more, but I can't complain about what they give us considering, you know, how little money they make off directly from Legacy players.
That's a really great way to look at it.
Yeah, I try to stay positive, especially because it's my baby. I don't want to, like, just sit here whining to Wizards being like, you're not good enough. Because I feel like just making them angry is not going to help my problems. Though if
Hello.
You listen to me rant about, right? Though if you listen to me rant about counterbalance, I'm sure I'm not making anybody happy. I'm sure literally at this point, Wizards is not banning counterbalance just to spite me. And you know what? I totally deserve it. But Wizards, I love you. Please. Pretty please.
That's like when Shadows Over Innistrad first came out and I saw that Delirium was going to be a mechanic. I really, really liked the mechanic Delirium. But on the other hand, I was like, you know that when either the next block comes out or like when the one after it, they're going to print some fuck shit to hose the graveyard. Like, you know that, like, because they even said, because people had said, you know, are you going to print? Because I guess Delirium was starting to get really good. And people were like, wow, you know, are you going to reprint Grafdigger's Cage? Are you going to do anything else like that? And then Wizards was like, no, you know, we're going to let Delirium sort of have its moment. But then I was like, oh, now you're going to let it have its moment. But come 6 months from now, they're going to print some more amazing graveyard hate just to spite me. And I was like, damn it, Wizards. And so Wizards giveth and Wizards taketh away.
Seriously. But I mean, let's be real. The last few months as a Legacy player, it's been Wizards giveth, giveth, giveth.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, they have not been fucking around with, mm-hmm. pardon my language, but with what they've been doing for us Legacy players. I'm sorry, but Eternal Masters and Conspiracy, like, We got Berserk, which was crazy expensive. We got Show and Tell. Like, we got some good stuff this summer from Wizards. So I'm just going to sit back and, like, pray they find a solution for the dual lands. And when they do that, I am sure that they will be ready to sit around rolling in the wheelbarrows of money that Legacy players everywhere will be bringing to their front door.
You know it's going to be, like, the major players from Wizards, and they're going to be doing, like, a rendition of Proud Mary. Like, it's going to be, like, Trick and Aaron and Morrow and Helena, and we're rolling, like, money falling down from the sky. It's going to be great. Just,
I would pay so much additional money just to see that.
I would like to see that, too.
Yeah, that's
you know
awesome.
That Helene would be the Tina. Come on now.
Oh, please.
Helena in a Tina Turner outfit. But she has to have the hair, too.
She could do it. Her hair can get pretty big.
I'm just thinking, like, Miss Congeniality 2 now, if anybody saw that.
So Wizards made some organized play announcements the other day, and they announced that they are, in fact, taking something away. They are discontinuing the Super Sunday series. They said that the last event is going to be on January 6th and 7th at Wizards headquarters, but they came to realize that the program had some challenges, the main one being that the event has almost as many rounds as day one of a GP, if not more, and that it's a very poor experience to be there so late in the day on Sunday. You know, you're playing the Super Sunday series while the venue's being torn down. You have friends who are probably waiting for you. That's not fun either. And so do you guys have any dog in that fight? Like, are you sad to see that go?
Does anybody?
I mean, I think it is disappointing for people that liked doing the Super Sunday series. I have personally never done it. I know that when we were in Atlanta, Ben mentioned that he wanted to do it. I said, well, enjoy it now, I said, because eventually it's going to be gone. And he was like, no. And I was like, yeah, I'm like, they're taking it away. And, you know, I think for some people that, you know, they didn't do so well, you know, in the Grand Prix, like, it's definitely some like a bigger event that they can do. I'm hoping that if they do take it away, they can replace it with something that isn't necessarily the same, isn't quite as time consuming as a Super Sunday series, but something else that's fun for people to do on the second day if they didn't make day two. I know they already have, you know, major side events going on, and that's great, but I really hope that there could be something extra. I mean, granted, I'm comparing an Open to a Grand Prix, but, you know, with the Opens, they have, you know, Legacy and Standard Challenge as if it's a Modern Open. And I think that something similar to that would be something that could draw people in, whatever it may be, maybe a special focus on a format that people don't play very often, or just something new and exciting. I can't really use my brain meats right now to accurately come up with something they could do, but I really hope that they could replace it with something that would be equally fun for people to enjoy.
Yeah, while they were describing it in the article, I was like, oh, yeah, the venue's being torn down. There's always that one person who is either judging or playing in the Super Sunday series, and everybody's like, let's go have a good dinner and, like, not eat fast food for once. And then that one person is like, oh, well, I'm going to be here till, like, midnight, so... And then everybody's like, oh, God. I'm a little excited to see it go. I do know that there are people who enjoy it for all the reasons that Chris said, but especially from a judge standpoint where you have to judge it and then clean up after the fact and mm-hmm. or wait for the top eight draft or whatever it may be, it can go pretty late. And after you've worked a full weekend, that's not super fun. So, I mean, maybe they can do like a 6-round event that's just capped and starts like right when day two starts or something, you know, and doesn't start like 2 hours later and then is like 10 rounds. I think they can come up with something else to kind of replace it that would still make people happy and be like a bigger event than just, you know, a side event, you know, an 8-man or 32-man or whatever it may be. But I think they can come up with something else a little more time conducive.
Yeah, my biggest complaint about the Super Sunday series was that the formats didn't really make a lot of sense. Like, when it first started, I seem to recall that the Super Sunday series would always match the format of the main event. So if you were playing in a modern GP, the Super Sunday series would be modern. And then all of a sudden you started going to events and it was like, it's a modern GP and a tiny leader Super Sunday series. And you're like, why? Like, it just never matched the format. And then, you know, that always made it really difficult because then it was like, okay, I got to bring two decks now. And it's like, you're already trying to pack light. Some of us are already packed pretty hefty. And, you know, then you got to prepare for like two different metas. Like, okay, I got to be good at modern today, standard today. It's a lot, you know. And so the fact that the formats never synced up, the fact that they always just felt really random, the fact that they go really long. Like I said, it's a cute idea. I think, you know, they are kind of right to get rid of it. And it does seem like the majority of people agreed with that. Something else they're getting rid of, GP Vegas. So when GP Vegas was announced, we heard it was going to be a 3 GP weekend with Legacy, Standard, and Modern. There was enough feedback in the community where the Standard portion is being replaced by a Limited portion. So the GPs are now going to be Legacy, Limited, and Modern. Any thoughts on that?
Shock.
Yay.
I'm excited.
Me too. I'm excited, but I was shocked. Like, when someone literally called me up and they were like, hey, did you hear one of the Legacy or one of the formats at GP Vegas got cut? And I was like, oh no, Aaron and I were thinking about going because it's the week after our wedding. And they were like, no, it's not Legacy that got cut. I was just shocked. I did not. Standard was like the last format I would have expected them to cut, but I'm totally fine with it. I'm super excited.
Yeah, as far as I know, we're still on for getting a house, so the girlfriend bracket house is going to be a thing. And so if you want to come stay with us, Kate.
Yes.
It's going to be pretty dope.
It's going to be up in the air since it's literally the week after our wedding. Aaron and I are like, what are we doing? But that might be a possibility.
Oh my goodness. You should just get married at Vegas and like and crowdfund your wedding. Like, how dope would that be?
If anybody wants to pay for me and Aaron,
do it.
Totally fine with that. I will wear a Liliana whatever dress for like crowdfunding this wedding. Like, I'm down. Tameo, like, you name it. I'll make Aaron wear a Jay's costume. Like, just magic community. Just want to say that option is there. Oh, though, Aaron, you did hear how dope our wedding is going to be.
Cut to like a week from now, and she's like, Aaron and I aren't getting married anymore. Like, wonder why. So Katie,
right
you
now.
Brought up a really interesting article involving something that took place at GP London and a visually impaired Magic player. Why don't you tell us about it?
Yeah, so apparently there was a person, his name is Richard Wheatley, who was at GP London, which is obviously a limited GP, and the night before day two, which he made, they were trying to figure out how he was going to draft because he can't see and read the cards. And I was just really impressed that Channel Fireball took it upon themselves to make sure that he could, one, play day two, and two, you know, draft by himself and just like everybody else. They seem to go above and beyond, and that, I don't know, it resonated really well with me. So what they did was they put the draft pod that he was in a different kind of part of the venue. And then they had him standing a bit away from the table. And then somebody would, one of the people that worked for Channel Fireball, would get the cards, bring them over to him, whisper the card names, and then he would pick a card. And, you know, that would be in his draft pool. And then the person who, the employee would take the cards back, and then the pod would, you know, keep drafting like normal. And what was funny was they said that, their draft pod actually finished before the other day two draft pods who were all drafting together, even though they were making accommodations. But I was super impressed at, Richard's dedication to Magic because his system that he has to go through to make it work just seems so complex. Apparently he brings like a whole Braille typewriter to the venue, and he drafts cards and then he Braille writes on his sleeves a number which corresponds to a notepad that he has, and that number as associated with a card name. And so he has to work out like an entire code before he can even, you know, play his deck in the tournament. And besides working out this whole code that he kind of has to have semi-memorized, he, you know, can't see the board state very well. So he, you know, an opponent's like, I play a forest. And then in his mind, he has to remember 8 to 20 turns down the road that that person has one forest among however many other land and creatures and spells in the graveyard and so many different things. And I was really impressed with his dedication and also Channel Fireball being very, you know, supportive of that and making sure that he could have a great day two and draft just like everybody else.
Yeah, the article was featured on the Mothership. It was written by Corbin Hostler. So if you have Craig Jones, I'm sorry. So if you have a second, please go look at it. And it does show the pictures, you know, the process that Channel Fireball, came up with to help him draft. And he seems to have a really great sense of humor. The person interviewing him said, I asked if he'd been visually impaired from birth. And, he replied, no, when I was 5, I had a brain tumor. And the interviewer replied, ouch. And Richard says, oh, the tumor didn't hurt much, but the staples coming out did. And I was like, oh my goodness. Like, you had a tumor at 5. He's 21 now. He's a physics graduate from Lancaster University. He's been playing Magic for 2 years since Khanza Tarkir came out. He plays at a store called Dark Sphere in London. And he seems to have a really great community around him. Some really great judges that support him and just all the support in the world. And, you know, that's really what it's all about. You know, everybody should have the opportunity to play this game. And I just have all the respect in the world for him and for everybody involved who helped make this possible.
Absolutely.
Yeah. This weekend, I actually, I went to Montana for the weekend to hang out. And we went to a hot springs. And at the hot springs, there was somebody there who was completely blind. And it seemed like pretty new to being blind. And I was kind of just like observing him and, you know, seeing how he did things. And it just makes you really, you know, cherish what you have, because sight is one of those things that until you don't have it, you don't realize how much I think you rely on it. Yeah. And I'm just super impressed when people are able to, you know, still play Magic, still go out and do stuff despite, you know, the hardships that they're facing. So when I read about this kid who's using a Braille typewriter and Braille sleeves and all this stuff that I don't even know how it works, I was just like, wow, that is awesome. Like,
yeah,
big kudos.
Yeah, it's funny. I remember the first time I met Hallie in person was at an SCG Open in Seattle, and there was a young man there who was also blind, and he was playing Abzan Reanimator. And for those who don't remember when that was standard legal, that deck was not easy to pilot. Like, I didn't even go near it because there was so much going on there. And so, you know, I think we tend to underestimate how complex Magic is. Mm-hmm. When you're sighted, you know, Katie, you mentioned that example of like just keeping track of your board state. You know, if you're somebody who plays a graveyard deck, you need to know what's in your graveyard at any point. And if you're playing something like a burn deck, you know, keeping track of life totals, there's a lot to do in the game that relies on sight and being able to play a difficult to pilot deck and still excel at it, or just being able to draft, you know, having to not only remember what all the cards do anyways, because you're playing a sealed format, but then what you're facing, it's a lot. And, you know, to take all of that on and do well and the passion for it, it just says a lot. And it's really admirable.
Mm-hmm. I'm just happy to hear Channel Fireball was so accommodating. Like my mom is like my nerdy inspiration in my life, and she's also deaf. So like I've my whole life just like seen the barriers she's had to like having access to doing the things she wants to do. So to hear like Channel Fireball like put in the work to make sure that, you know, like the kid could fairly get like the same opportunity as everybody else, like really makes me happy.
Yeah, I feel like we've also been seeing that since, you know, Brandon Burton is somebody who, Sandy Dog, you know, he won GP Indiana with Burn, and his mom and him sort of famously go to events and they become sort of a fixture on the scene. And I feel like I've seen more people, you know, with disabilities coming out, more family members supporting them. And, you know, it's slowly but surely not such a, what's the word I'm looking for? It just doesn't catch your eye like it used to. Like I hesitate to use the word normal, but it's become sort of commonplace, for lack of a better term, where before you would see Brandon and have a lot of questions and wonder who that woman was. But, you know, because he's become a lot more visible, I'm seeing other people come out too. And it's just become sort of an everyday thing to have people, you know, with sight, without sight, in wheelchairs, without wheelchairs. And it's not as big of a deal anymore. And that's a great thing. Mm-hmm. So. We have a listener question this week. If you want us to answer your questions, you can send them to thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. And this one is a good one. I believe Kate even has notes.
That might be true.
Yeah, that's true. So this email is from Jaime. Jaime says, "Hey, Girlfriend Bracket, I've played competitive Magic for a little over a year now. About 6 months ago, I was lucky enough to land a spot on a sponsored team in my hometown." Way to go. Being on the team has been invaluable to my growth as a player, and I can confidently say that I wouldn't be playing on the level I am now without my teammates. That being said, I've begun to have serious issues with the way the guys on my team regard queer and trans people within the community and how openly they reject the need for diversity and equity within Magic. I've tried to call them in about it and police their behavior during practice and tournaments to no avail. I'm starting to feel like it may just be time to move on and find another less shitty group of people to play with, but I also fear that this issue may just be a pervasive part of the male-dominated culture of gaming and that I won't end up finding another group where I won't experience the same issues. It's a tough position to be in, and any advice you can offer would be great. Love the show. Thank you for being such strong, positive voices in the Magic community. Best, Jaime."
Oh, all the feelings. That really sucks that he has to deal with people who are supposed to be supportive as part of your team kind of being down on people that they don't even know. I would say find a different team. If they don't listen to your concerns and take them seriously and it bothers you that much, I know if it was me, I'd be like, I'm out. I don't care how amazing these people are as players. I don't care if they're a wealth of information. That's fine. But I don't want to be tied to this anymore, because if something were to crop up or happen, I would feel bad to even be associated with them. Maybe they're really nice people, but they have some very closed-minded viewpoints. And I think that taking that into account is more important than whether or not they're good at this game. So if it were me, I would say try to find some other people. You will find people that are not ignorant. You will find people that are not in the same mindset. I have plenty of friends myself that they're just like, why is this an issue? We just want to play the game. Like, we don't care about any of these things. You use these pronouns? Great. That's what we're going to call you. You don't identify this way? Great. We'll never call you that again. You know, people are open and accepting, and you will find a group of people that are like that. It's just not these people, unfortunately.
So first off, that's awful. I'm super sorry you're going through that. I think that when it comes down to issues like this, you have two options, and I don't think it's something that you can let someone else decide for you. Just educate yourself on what you can do. And I feel like I'm saying this because I feel like as a female Legacy player, like, I unfortunately end up meeting a lot of people who are like how you describe. And, you know, I have to decide whether I want to put up with it or not. So your first option is just to really stick it out and try to be a representative. It's the worst option, from like a personal standpoint. I'm sure Erin and the other girls can speak to how like tough it can be to try to be representative of, you know, being a good person, as like, you know, full of yourself that might sound, but it's exhausting. You know, I feel like it's expected for women and trans individuals and minorities to be the better person. Like, there's just so much put on you to like be, you know, the best, to not take the higher road. But in reality, that's so much to ask of somebody. No one can be perfect all the time. And it sucks because there's no like fair police out there to fix that problem. But then you have the other option of to find another group. Like, while there are a lot of people like that, not everybody's like that. I mean, hello, there's S4 right here. We're pretty bombed. Just saying. But it's bullshit that you're kind of put in that place where you either have to go find a new group of people to play with or work really hard to be like this good person representative, like beating like the awesome drum of, you know, equality. But unfortunately, those are your two options. As someone who tries really hard to be like a representative of the community, like I work in a Magic shop, like I try to be like a female Legacy player. It's like I'm not even super well known. Like, I'm not like Erin where I have, you know, a ton of followers. And I'm still exhausted. I can't pretend that, like, I don't know how Erin, I don't know how you do what you do, because I'm exhausted half the time. Like, I mean, by the end of my day at work, like, so many times, so when I work, I always have a male boss. and they are Dario, who's awesome. He doesn't really play Magic. He doesn't know much about Magic. He doesn't buy Magic. He can't really give good advice on Magic. Obviously, not quite the same boat for me. So people come in and they'll be like, oh, I have a Magic question. I'll be like, oh, I got you. Like, come here, boo. Like, what can I do for you? And they'll be like, no, I want to talk to him. Well, he can't answer your questions. He can't tell you the difference between a volcanic island and a steam vents. So he's not going to be very helpful to you. So why don't you talk to me? And, you know, it sucks that there are people out there like that and that you have to deal with it. And when I get home at the end of the day after dealing with those people, I just want to punch a wall or pour a drink. Generally, it's the second one. but in reality, like, that those are sadly your options. I hope that you pick the one that's right for you. I don't think you should exhaust yourself just because you think like, oh, I gotta stand up for, you know, trans people and women and minorities. Like, I think that you need to also take care of your mental health. And if those people are wearing you out, you gotta take care of you. Like, it's not an easy road to put up with those kind of people and try to help them. And like, you can't expect people to change. Like, you can try to educate people, but you can't expect them to change. So make sure you're taking care of you. I think that's just the thing I'm trying to get across.
Yeah. When I read this question, I was just like, oh, this is going to be a tough one to answer, because this kind of gets down to what I think a lot of people are going through. And how Kate said it was perfect. Like, if there's two ways, you can either stop putting up with it or keep putting up with it and fighting the good fight, which nobody blames you if you don't, because it is exhausting. I would suggest, if you decide to stick with it, I think that there is often, especially in gaming, a group mentality that goes along with a lot of things. And you see it especially in groups, or I've seen it in Magic groups, where the people you talk to on an individual basis don't have this viewpoint, and then when you talk to them in a group, you're like, you're a whole different person. And that happens in a lot of, you know, facets of life. So what you might try, if you decide to stick with it, is talking to your teammates individually and just be like, hey, I'm just trying to figure out where you're coming from when you say this. Like, I don't, you know, approve, or however you want to word it. But sometimes talking to people in private and letting them know one-on-one, I know you are doing this thing and I don't like that thing. Sometimes if you can talk to each one of them individually, it might actually make a difference in the group dynamic, because as soon as some person starts joking about something stupid, everybody else joins in, then everybody's on the bandwagon and it's hard to derail that bandwagon. So, you know, that might just be a different way to bring it up, because sometimes when you're the only person screaming into a crowd of many people that disagree with you, it can be hard to get somewhere. So maybe breaking up the group mentality, talking to people one-on-one, letting them know you have an issue with it, and kind of pointing out the reasons why, like, why is it bad to have diversity in Magic? You might get somewhere, and, you know, that might just be a good tactic to try if you want to, you know, stick it out and try and fix things.
This question really hit home for me, because I was not always woke, as the kids say. You know, I played World of Warcraft for many years, and I was not a feminist. You know, I used a lot of the lines that people use today, like, well, I've never experienced this and it's not that bad. I remember when the Triumph of Ferocity art controversy happened, you know, I was somebody who defended the art and used lines like, well, what's the big deal? And it's just context and things like that. And I've been in situations where I have stayed in groups, in raid groups, in PvP teams with shitty people, and distanced myself from the shittiness. You know, I compartmentalized it by saying that this is the internet. I'm never going to meet these people. We're not friends, you know, kind of treating it like a one night stand, where it's like, I'm just getting my raid loot. I'm getting my strategies. I'm getting my tanks, my healings, my DPS. And so it doesn't matter. Like, you might be terrible, but I'm getting what I need from you. And so it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're making a rape joke, and it doesn't matter if you're using gay slurs, because it's not that, it's not personal. I'm not really being affected by this. And, you know, when I first saw his email, my first response would be to do that. Like, if that were me, that would be something my first reaction would be to, if you can sort of compartmentalize it, to go ahead and do that. And then I really thought about it and kind of went to some uncomfortable places in my own head of just sort of dealing with the reality of how many times did I stay in situations that were fucked up with that kind of logic, and ultimately realizing how bad it is. And so the Aaron now in October of 2016 would tell you that that's sort of how these things become a problem, is when you use that logic of, well, it's just a team thing, and I'm never going to see these people, and we're not really friends, you know, keeping it sort of distant. You know, I feel like that's kind of how we got into this situation, is sort of that plausible deniability. And I think that it's important to pick when and how you approach it. Like, for example, if I was raiding, I wouldn't be on, and if I was in a 25 man raid, I wouldn't say on Ven, you know, that's not very nice, you know, cause I'm not going to win that one. You know, I'm very outnumbered there. But, you know, maybe when the raid is over, I might send that person a whisper and say, you know, maybe you shouldn't have said that, and that was really wrong. And so, you know, if you can certainly find the best place to have those conversations, I think you should really do that. And, if you have exhausted all of your resources and they're still not, you know, working for you and they're still not listening to you, and it really matters that much to you, but you definitely should look somewhere else, because we talked on our last episode about how we need action and people to name names and call things out. And, you know, I feel like it's, you know, we can't say to do that and then tell you to stay on the team. you know, you need to do that and, you know, sort of make it known that that's not okay. And, you know, maybe, you know, you're mentioning that you might not be able to find another team. Maybe they might realize that they can't replace you either. Like, you know, if you have formed a bond with them and maybe you have some very unique skills, you know, maybe they won't be so willing to watch you walk out the door. And they might say, oh, wow, you're really serious about this. What can we do to make you stay? And then at that point, you can say, knock this shit off. Don't make that comment anymore. You know, and they might not be willing to let you go so quickly either. And maybe you two can, you guys can work that out. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at meanmugger. That's MEANMUGGER. Or Twitch, twitch.tv/meanmugger, MTG. I don't think I'll be streaming this week, but I'm hopeful for next week. So try and catch me then. I'll hope to do much better at Kaladesh than this previous time. So hopefully we can get a win or two in.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at THKRIZ. My Gmail is yothkriz@gmail.com. My Snapchat is Cryptic Command with K's. And my blog is backtablesmtg.wordpress.com. I should have a couple new blog posts coming up in the near future.
And my name is Kate. You can find me on hipsters.com on Hope Eternal, facebook.com/altersbykate. I'm on Twitter at an awful French name, BEAUTECOULISSES, and on Snapchat and Instagram at KDonnelly278.
And Kate, I love your Twitter name, just for the record.
Oh, thanks. It means backstage beauty. It's from when I worked on Beauty and the Beast when I was working in theater.
Oh, man, backstage beauty. That was my nickname in college.
Was it really?
I never went to college.
Aaron, I love you.
I love you too. And it has been a joy to have you on the show. And we love it every time you're here. And thank you so much for joining us on such short notice.
Thanks for having me. I'm here for you guys any day of the week.
Yay. and I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalAstrus. That's OriginalAstrus. You can email me at OriginalAstrus@gmail.com, twitch.tv/OriginalAstrus. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket. You can support us on patreon.com/TheGirlfriendBracket. And you can email us at TheGirlfriendBracket@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you very soon. Bye-bye.